Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Should we have a topic?
Yes, we should probably have a topic. Let's try for the topic that we didn't get to last time.
All right, so let me try. Can we try multidisciplinary research?
Yeah, totally.
And what happens when humanities and science people work together?
Get up on the mic, man. What does multidisciplinary research mean to you in your field? Senator, I decline to answer.
My counsel has advised me not to answer that question.
Do the senators do those committees, or is that always congresspeople?
I believe both the House and the Senate can investigate. And they have slightly different duties in what they hear and what they investigate. But in general, if they're like, I think he's up to no good, they can investigate your ass.
Got it.
And they can subpoena you. But they don't have a lot of what? Subpoena ya? Did I sort of put those together?
The way you said it, it sounded like
subpoena
one word.
Subpoena ya.
They can do that. Okay. Yeah. So what does it mean to you? For you, practically, in your work?
Most problems...
Multidisciplinary.
Are very complicated.
Research. That's what we're talking about.
So the reason multidisciplinary research works, because most problems are very complicated. And there are, you know, multiple aspects and vicissitudes to that problem. So it's good to have people with different perspective and different skill sets working on it.
Yeah.
But usually multidisciplinary research means I have, you know, a hardware engineer and a software programmer. And I have a specialist in human-machine interfaces.
Are you under gastric distress? Is your donut?
No, I was drinking some iced tea, and just because you belch up a little in the microphone doesn't mean you're under gastric distress. What is gastric distress? I mean,
distress of the gastric.
But I mean, your gastrointestinal tract is always churning and burning. You know, so if your stomach goes in the middle of the thing, that's not gastric distress. That's a healthy peristaltic contraction. That's what that is.
it's one of my fears that I'll be near someone who's starting to do that.
Is this the I'm about to blow chunks?
Something terrible is happening.
Nobody likes chunk blowing.
When swallowing and breathing are starting to become the same action, that worries me. Multidisciplinary research. Hardware engineers, software programmers.
I guess what I'm
don't get
out.
It. And here's
you don't get it.
I
mean don't get it.
Get it.
Okay, please explain.
You say you have a team and you need these different skill sets. That's fine. Why is that multidisciplinary? Why is that not just you need people to help you do things that you don't know how to do?
I believe it is one and the same. What the hell are you talking about?
But is that what multidisciplinary research means?
Yeah, it just means that if you're going to work on a complicated problem, don't put three and only three mechanical engineers on it.
So let me ask you this. When someone's building a house, is that a multidisciplinary research project?
Of course it is.
Research project?
Well, not research project, but an application of research.
Multidisciplinary engineering.
Yeah, I mean, because think about it. You have a plumber, you have an electrician, you have a carpenter, you have a roofer, you have a drywall guy. People think that there's no difference between the drywall guy and the carpenter. There is. They're very different skill sets. I was a drywall guy, and I used to work with a lot of carpenters.
Covered in dust.
Yeah. And most carpenters know a bit about drywall, and most drywall guys know a bit about the framing that goes underneath the drywall because you're the guy that nails the drywall to it and finishes it and stuff like that. But it's nice to have experts all working together. You get the job done more efficiently, more effectively, better, more rapidly. It's good.
So why is it not just you get a team of experts to help you with your research and not make it multidisciplinary? And I don't mean why – I'm not saying don't do it that way. I'm just saying what gets it over the hump where now it's a multidisciplinary research project where instead of, say, this is a chemical engineering project where I need a software programmer.
That is a multidisciplinary project. Anytime you have more than just one type of person working on it.
It doesn't sound like enough to me. Surely in your lab you've got some people who – like, you would never say only chemical engineering folks can work on this project.
Actually, people do that.
You need a project manager, right? You need a bureaucrat. Well, everyone's got to have a bureaucrat.
in academics, say you're in a class.
Someone has to make the sandwiches.
Right. But say you're in a class, and the class is a mechanical engineering class, okay, or a chemistry class, or a chemical engineering class.
I'm dropping this class.
Yeah, you're probably dropping that class.
Do you know that someone suggested to me that I take deformable bodies?
Right.
Deformed my mouth saying that. Deformable bodies as my engineering elective? I said, okay.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I got in there on the first day. They were like, okay, so we're going to take everything that you learned in statics and apply it to deformable bodies. And I thought, perhaps I should have taken statics before I did this.
Yeah, statics is probably the prerequisite. Did you take physics 1 here, though? Because that's a lot of statics.
I did, but my physics 1 had no calculus in it.
Do we have that now? I don't think we have that anymore.
You're old. I went to school a very long time ago.
Yeah.
So my physics one had no calculus in it.
Yeah, it's possible to teach
F
that, right?
Equals MA and ignore the area under the curve.
I think it's actually easier to teach it if you have calculus. I've always believed that. You have a look of incredulity on your face.
I think you might rely on the numbers too much, Pete.
Sometimes I do. What's wrong with numbers? I like numbers. They don't talk back to you like people do.
I think you should transcend.
Transcend from what to what?
You should leave the numbers behind and then teach the concept.
I think you could do both. I think you have to do both.
I bet you you can't.
I can. I like the concepts.
No, I bet you $1,000 you can't do it.
With regard to what? Just basic statics and kinematics and physics?
I mean, I figure not only would you have to rely on numbers to teach anything that you want to teach, but also you'll do a Stewie impression. I just think you're constitutionally
incapable. You know, I will. I'm incapable of not doing some cheap cartoon character. I will admit that.
Let me get back to my point.
Your Honor, I will so stipulate.
Multidisciplinary projects. I hear what you're saying. You're saying that is a multidisciplinary project. But then what isn't?
Let me tell you what isn't. Okay. And you make a good point. Most real problems in the real world are multidisciplinary. But the problem is we have these things called classes. And the class is a requirement for, say, just the aeronautical engineering department. And it's only aeronautical engineers taught by only aeronautical engineers. And if you're doing a certain core
but
fundamentals.
Once you're teaching, aren't you more than an aeronautical engineer after that? I mean, it's not all professors of the practice in there, is it?
Actually, the professors of the practice are the ones that have the broader experience. The ones that understand the value and the role of other folks.
But my point is, I mean, education is a discipline.
Okay, so I will
teaching,
so stipulate.
If you're teaching, you are also a professor. You are also an educator.
Okay.
So that's multidisciplinary too. It's not
yeah.
AEs taught by AEs. It's AEs taught by AE professors.
Right.
Right?
So let's take something even fundamental.
Okay.
You're going to take Calculus 2.
Now, I take issue...
With Calculus 2?
No.
Nobody takes issue with Calculus 2.
With the idea of something being more fundamental or not. Isn't fundamental essentially a binary proposition?
Mm. You and your language again. You're messing me
I'm
up.
I'm just
with
feeling
the...
feisty today.
No, I think there are degrees of fundamentality.
I want definitions. I want definitions that work.
All I'm saying is if you are taking a class in your major, let's pick your major, STACK.
Do you know why my major is no longer called STACK? It's LMC now.
But I mean, so they changed the whole department?
They have.
So it used to be Science, Technology, and Culture.
It's now Literature,
It's now the
Media,
School of Literature, Media, and Communication.
And Communication.
And it used to be called the School of Science, Technology, and Culture?
No, it used to be called the School of Literature, Communication, and Culture.
Right. So LCC has changed to LMC.
And the STACK degree has now changed the LMC degree.
Oh, it's literally called Literature.
Somebody said, you know
what? I like STACK. STACK was better.
Somebody said it's always been confusing that people get a STACK degree from the LCC school. So let's make it an LMC degree from the LMC school.
Oh, okay. So the school and the – but schools – some schools can offer more than one degree.
It's true.
I did not know that. I'm glad that you explained that to me. So let's take the Literature, Media, and Culture thing.
Communication.
Yeah, see, they're not a good one because they have three names.
It's important.
And as we all know, if you have three names or one name, you're more important than normal people with two names.
If you have three names, you're either a serial killer or an Oscar-winning actor.
Or royalty.
Usually five names for royalty.
Only if you're from the Austria-Hungary Empire.
Three names. Okay.
What was the point we were trying to make here?
I want you to explain to me what multidisciplinary research is, and not by saying that that's what research is. Yeah. That's right.
So I'm going to take something I know at least a little bit about, and that's chemical engineering.
Everybody knows a little bit about something, Pete.
If you're doing research that is connected very tightly to the core, the fundamentals of chemical engineering, and it doesn't deviate from that, and that would be something like, you know, mass transfer in a reactor, how quick are the concentration changes in the reactor and particles and atoms move about, that is something that chemical engineers are trained in. And you could have a team of five chemical engineers and only chemical engineers working on that. Or one chemical engineer. That's all you need. That is so embodied by the field of chemical engineering.
And so now, without being a smartass, I am going to ask this. Is there not some chemistry and physics in that? Is there not going to be some mechanical engineering when you're talking about plants? Meaning, isn't there already some creep? There's some other disciplines.
But very little.
Very little, but there's a little bit in there.
But if the reactor deformed, as in deformable bodies, as it was going through this reaction, if there were some very complicated chemistry, you need some chemists.
You're saying where once it was
the
static,
deformable, when it becomes broader.
Yeah.
And if you are concerned.
That's just kind of what you're doing anyway.
Yeah, but if you're concerned about the economics and the business ramifications, you'd need an econ person and a business person. But the point is, if you've already realized that this thing, the reaction is fixed, the reactor doesn't move, it's already economically feasible, we're going to make lots of money on this, so I don't have to decide that minor tweaks will make it more or less expensive. You're just trying to design the conditions under where you get things mixing the most or transferring the most mass. Then that's not multidisciplinary.
I want to major in minor tweaks.
Do we have that here?
We should.
That'd be good.
But so what's the bar?
If it's a complex problem, it's multidisciplinary. If it's a very simple problem, it's not.
We're having a microphone issue here all of a sudden.
I keep banging the microphone. Well, it's loose. What's wrong with it? Don't we have a?
I spoke to the engineer about
facilities
that.
He said
this will be simple to fix. I said how? He said I'm just going to loosen that and tighten that. I said okay, cool. Clearly,
he didn't fix it.
It was not that simple.
Right. It's probably a complex problem that requires more than just.
There's no way that a pair of pliers and a Phillips head screwdriver is going to be.
No, that's not a complex problem. This is a pretty simple problem.
Taylor Burdett, I'm calling you out.
Anyone who breathes and has a toolbox could probably handle this sort of thing.
Don't you have to have something inside the toolbox?
But I guess what I'm saying is when we talk about multidisciplinary stuff, we talk about different levels of scientists and engineers, maybe a business person, an econ person. You can have international affairs. If this has to do with anything that has business or interaction with people or nation states internationally, then you want an international affair guy.
So are you asking a question that requires that, or are you asking a simple question that you're then asking other people to look at and say, oh, well, from an economic point of view, blah, blah, blah? Or,
I think you're looking at a complex system that requires lots of skill sets to analyze the various parts and deal with the interface in between those.
Can you deliver a research question off the top of your head, or are they usually long, drawn out, and involve sub-points and organizational charts?
What do you mean, deliver research?
Say it to me right now, research question.
I'm trying to think of something good, though. I think of a lot of boring stuff that would put people to sleep.
Let's start with boring.
How to make the next generation of microchip.
Okay.
And it's relatively simple. We take, you know, either electron beams or radiation, and we write things. We write things on a material, and the material is very special. Wherever the light hits, it changes the nature of the material underneath it.
And Simba rules it.
And what the who? What is this, a Disney movie? Simba rules it. What?
Wherever the light touches.
Oh, okay. This is from the Disney movie, The Lion King. God.
Let's move on.
Yeah. And you make the material such that where the light touches it, it either makes the material dissolve, so then when you put a solvent on it, it dissolves, or you make it so it cross-links, so the other part dissolves. That's negative or positive tone resists. And then you have a pattern.
Is that photostatic? Is that what they call that?
So this is photolithography. Writing with light. Photolithography.
I love it.
Fun with Latin roots. We did that on the Inside the Black Box today.
Were you talking zoology?
We were. We're talking all about amphibians and strange names. I have a theory that...
Every noon, WREK Atlanta.
Latin.
Wednesdays, that is.
Latin is a very valuable language to learn. But our problem is when we taught it in high schools years ago, we taught conversational Latin. Who the hell needs that?
No one.
You're not
going to
walk
in
into a bar in ancient Rome and say, hey.
I believe that originally the upperclassmen spoke in conversational Latin to keep the underclassmen from knowing what was being said.
But actually, Latin was the world's language for a while, right?
No.
Well, when the Romans ruled the world,
no way, man.
All educated people spoke Latin.
I don't
believe that's how you could communicate.
I don't believe that.
That's how the Catholic Church still communicates. That's how the College of Cardinals selects the Pope.
Nope.
Why don't you believe me?
I just don't. I think you're wrong.
But now, what are the languages? Some would say English is the international language.
I give you example one, China.
I bet the archbishop of a couple major cities in China speak Latin.
Maybe currently. I'm saying back when you said the language of the world was Latin.
Oh, yeah. The language of that corner of the world. I'll give you that. But, you know, the world was a big place.
One small section of the world.
So you're right. There was probably a Chinese dialect that dominated much of Asia, just as though Rome Latin dominated much of Europe.
And don't forget the lizard people.
We have that?
Yes. They speak in clicks and pops.
Actually, there are African languages that have...
Not talking about Bushmen.
Okay.
Talking about lizard people.
Have we gone to the science fiction show now?
So multidisciplinary.
I guess what I'm saying is, what happens if we mixed science and technical people with humanities people? Is that multidisciplinary? Does that exist? Would we ever have a need for that? Does that ever happen? What's the story?
Well, it's the question that defines it, right? I mean, when I said, like, give me a research question, you're like, how do we build a better, you know, the next generation microchip? That's a start, but probably it wouldn't be all that helpful to have a poet in that group, except to entertain.
Wait, what was the research question you were talking about?
How to build the next generation microchip.
Maybe not, but let's recall from Carl Sagan's novel Contact, as Ellie Arroway was whisking through the...
Yes,
they should have sent a poet.
I know.
So there's an example.
You're getting dangerously close to Stardust talk.
We know you don't like that.
Don't like that.
But here is a physicist saying you should have sent a poet.
To describe, to communicate it.
But they could have captured it better, perhaps.
Yeah.
There is humanities and science multidisciplinary research.
Okay, so here's a reason for humanities and multidisciplinary research groups. If you say that within the research group is also the communication of those results, is the way that those results, mm-hmm. or it's going to be recorded.
Right.
Right? So maybe if a research group, when you're doing your research, Pete, how does your research group track its results and then communicate those to the outside world?
Unfortunately, as you said before.
The outside world, beyond the sea where dragons be.
Well, there are a number of books written on sort of the ivory tower and the lack of most technical professors to communicate not what they do, but the relevance to humanity of what they do.
Would I be correct in saying that you just dodged my question?
What was the question again?
Right. So, when you do your research, Pete, mm-hmm. who's in charge of communicating your results and recording your work?
Everyone is. The graduate students record the details of theirs, and we assemble the bigger picture, and a paper is written.
What? Okay. First off, passive voice? Uh-uh.
Oh, we do so love the passive voice.
No. No, 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 no. If I may quote Ben Kingsley from Sexy Beast. No, 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 no.
I thought he was in Gandhi.
He was in that, too.
Did he really star in a film called Sexy Beast?
Yeah, he played Don Logan.
Was this an adult film?
It was more adult than some films.
So like softcore stuff, late night and Cinemax.
It was not softcore stuff, no. It's about a retired gangster who is dragged back into the world.
They start playing, wah, 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 wah.
It's a great movie.
Okay. I believe you.
Okay. Ray Winstone's in it.
So you quoted him as saying, no, 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 no.
This is an actual line from Sexy Beast by Ben Kingsley. No, 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 no. He just does that.
Thank you and good night.
Right? It's hardcore and it's scary.
But what were we saying no to again?
Passive voice. A paper is not written.
So you make a very good point of the collaboration between the humanities and the science people. Humanities people like... What's the opposite of passive voice? Non-passive voice? What's the...
One might say active.
Active voice. You like to do active. Sometimes you'll even do first person. And we're like, no, 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 no. We're passive third person, right? We like passive third person because we like to... We like to convey this aura of objectivity by pulling ourselves out of the situation.
As if things just happen.
As though we're just God looking down and saying, and then the seas parted.
The experiment unfolded.
Yeah, that we like to do that. And we do that for a reason. We like to impart this aura of objectivity.
So do you know what your end goal communication-wise is before you begin? You got a team. Say you got a team of five people.
No, because it's research. We don't know what we're doing. We don't even know what the conclusion will be. We know Pupkis.
How are you recording? You said the grad students record.
Well, we record a lot of numbers, a lot of graphs,
is
a lot
there
of
narrative?
Pie charts.
Does anybody sit down and sort of write out the story of the experiment?
Is there? There's a little narrative. There's like, well, I tried this on Tuesday and found the results were utterly different. But then again, I didn't close the hood or something.
Do you have
like that.
Eyes?
It could have been contamination.
Are there eyes in there, or is it... Monday's results were utterly different from Tuesday's results. The hood was left open.
Yeah, and you try to figure out why you couldn't reproduce the experiment properly. So you write that down. But nobody writes, call me Ishmael, and starts out like that.
Some time ago, never mind how long in particular.
Yeah, they don't do that. But the point is, once you get a conclusion and you've learned something, then you have to communicate that to people.
That's important.
The introduction to all these papers should, in my opinion, carry the motivation. Why is this important? Billions of devices depend on the ever-increasing speed and efficiency of microelectronic devices. To this end, we are looking at a way to write things denser or make them work faster or things like that. We should put that in there.
Is that in there?
In a good paper, it is.
Are there a lot of good papers?
Some of them are crap. Maybe it's 40% good.
Do you ever hand your results off to someone else to create the paper, to build a multimedia presentation, to do the press to get your results out there?
No, we don't. And the point is, maybe this is a collaboration that we should be engaging in for writing papers. The problem is most journal articles are written for other eggheads to understand what some other group of eggheads did. And it's filled with jargon and it is almost impenetrable. But in their infinite wisdom, and I was up a little while ago
sarcasm?
No. The National Science Foundation requires people when they write a grant to get money to do research to talk about the intellectual merit. What's the interesting scientific question that they're asking? And then they always force you right on the front page to do something called broader impacts. You include the broader impacts so that it's literally transparency of government. It's so that normal people who can and read these. By the way, if something's funded, you can go on and say, here's what we funded. And you read the abstract and they have statements of broader impact. Why this is important in society as a whole. That is such an important thing to do. Now, they don't really do it for people. That's a bonus that the public can see this. They do it for the folks in Congress because the folks in Congress, if they don't understand it and they don't see why this might be interesting, they go nuts.
I always think of the...
And they give these golden fleece awards.
The shrimp on the treadmill thing.
What's the shrimp on the treadmill?
It was just...
you did tell me about
this.
Yeah,
it was
before.
A few years ago. The shrimp on a treadmill was... The sort of example, the exemplary.
The exemplar for stupid research.
The exemplar of frivolous research. They took this one piece of an experiment, of a set of things, and they said, look, they put shrimp on treadmills to measure how well they walked. you know, this is clearly, I don't even know what the argument, basically the argument was, this is taxpayer money. We should never spend it on anything like this. It's stupid. And that scientist who was like the PI, the principal investigator on the the shrimp on treadmills experiment, he wrote a very harsh and I welcome his harshness on this one, but a very harsh letter about how taking part of the research process out of context.
Oh, it makes research look really stupid.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That all research looks stupid.
So today, actually, on Inside the
Mind, he used the numbers. Sorry, he used the numbers, like how much is spent on shrimp, and finding shrimp and farming shrimp and all that.
Oh yeah, it's a $1 billion industry.
Yeah, say this is a real thing. We were
and I love shrimp. Big fan.
Yeah, I used to like shrimp until an allergic reaction formed.
Yeah, that happens. I got a bad one in Reno once. That was not good.
You think it was an allergic reaction?
No, it was uncooked. You bit into it, and as I'm swallowing, I'm like, that shrimp didn't get cooked. And then you pull the rest out, you're like, it's not pink. It's still the whitish, blackish color of a shrimp.
The gray of death.
The gray of death, yes. But I was trying to think. Oh, yeah.
Today
we had Joe Mendelson, who's the herpetology director of the Zoo Atlanta and also has an adjunct appointment here at Georgia Tech.
And if you're trying to guess at what that means he studies, it's not what you think.
Not herpes, reptiles and amphibians. That's what you're talking about. So he's talking about a joint project they had where they're looking at how snakes locomote, how snakes move.
Yes.
And he said if you take, you know, certain rattlesnakes and you put them on sand, they do extremely well. They're very efficient in moving. And by the way, moving on sand is a big problem for the military and for commerce and for people in general. And I actually was telling a story about how supposedly not the military ones. The military ones are actually designed very differently. But if you buy the commercial Humvees, people in Saudi Arabia don't buy them because they get stuck in the sand. And they have to like pull it out with a Ford Explorer. I just think that's hilarious. And by the way, this is not the military version. The military version does much better.
What's the advantage to a Ford Explorer?
I don't know. It's just designed better for sand than the commercial Humvee. And that's the one you buy at the Humvee dealer, not the ones the military use. They're very different. So in any case, but studying how rattlesnakes move might give us some insight into how to make vehicles move efficiently and effectively.
It will also help us make really creepy vehicles.
Yeah, I'm not saying they have to look like that, but robots learn from biologically inspired design a lot. And Joe said that there are snakes that you throw them on sand and they sink right in. They can't move on sand. What is the understanding that difference is very, very important.
I imagine the way snakes move is kind of like treads, right? Where there's stuff.
It is, yeah.
Stuff moving on
there's
the inside.
An edge.
And
there's a ridge
the
that goes in one direction that does that. And so we were talking about amphibians today, and he made an interesting point. Much of the biomass of many ecosystems are amphibians. So if we could learn to eat amphibians, this could be the new protein farm. And amphibians are much more efficient. For every pound of beef, you waste a lot more resources and energy than you would for an amphibian. So if you could learn to eat salamanders on a sandwich, this could feed the world. So the point is, not everything has to have a commerce application.
My stomach. Yes. Yes. It's flip-flopping.
About eating salamanders.
Yeah.
But the other thing is we know so little about amphibians.
I'm sort of surprised by that.
That's the point he made, that there is biology in amphibians that may lead to interesting discoveries about pharmaceuticals, about curing cancer, certainly curing infections. There's things in the skin of amphibians that are antimicrobial. Just really fascinating stuff. And if you can't at least make a paragraph argument for what potentially could come out of this, you shouldn't do the research. We don't know what's going to come out of it. But if you can at least potentially say, look, learning about these new species is important because look at all the neat chemistry and biology that has benefited us from new species. If you can't say that.
It just struck me, though, really what he was saying is we've got to figure out how to eat a new species.
Well, that was just one point he was making. He's not condoning eating salamanders. But he did say in South America, there are people that literally put a frog in a blender and make a milkshake out of it. Ugh.
If you'll pardon me for a moment, Pete, I'm going to go be sick. Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.